welcome to the show. I'm Father Roderick, back from a journey to the Holy Land and back at the microphone with lots of stories to tell. This show features the cool and the classical, the past and the future, the trends and the tradition. So, whatever you're doing, it is time to sit back, relax, and listen to the show. I'm so glad to be back from the Holy Land. I've got tons of stories to tell and to share with you in this show and also in my other show, The Walk, that you can find over at Tridio.com in case you're new to the network and new to my shows. But first of all, I want to thank my patrons, the supporters that make it possible for me to bring you this content without advertisement, without any begging, because I want to be there for everyone. But of course, it also requires some resources, and there's a small community of people that listen to the show and that support me. If you want to know more about that, just go over to patreon.com/FatherRoderick, and the community of patrons also have access to a special podcast that I record after this one, and it's only for the patrons, and I give them a little bit of behind-the-scenes content, and I answer questions. It's a more personal thing. So, again, Patreon.com/FatherRoderick, and thanks to the community of supporters.
You know what's going on? This is what's happening in your world.
Face it, Catholics rule. We got Boston, South America, the good part of Ireland, and we're making serious inroads in Mozambique, baby.
You've taken your first step into a larger world.
This morning I woke up at 1:45 a.m. after having slept for 2 hours, I think. And that was the end of my first ever journey to the Holy Land. We had to wake up very early in order to get back to the airport near Tel Aviv. We were staying in Jerusalem in the final days of my journey. And I was traveling with a group of people that needed extra care, so special needs group. And so there were a number of people in wheelchairs. Some of them required a lot of medical attention. Some of them were ill with, for instance, cancer or lung cancer. There was another lady who had cancer. There was someone who had a Parkinson's disease. And so in order to enable them to make this journey to the Holy Land, to go on a pilgrimage, the organization that I traveled with had brought in a lot of volunteers to help them and to assist them, and of course also some qualified personnel. And I wasn't participating in the pilgrimage as a pastor, at least not in the first place. Of course, as a priest, I'm always a pastor. But I was primarily there for work, to film the entire experience. This was both for my TV show. I've never done a documentary about the Holy Land, and I know that I've got a ton of viewers. It kind of varies between 40,000 to almost 100,000 a week. And many of them, we know this from research, are of an advanced age. And so either because of their advanced age or because of all sorts of other impediments, you know, not being able to afford it, for instance, those people will never go to the Holy Land. They can never go on this pilgrimage. And so I wanted to go through this experience myself, film it, and bring them along. That's kind of my thing. For all these years, I've been doing exactly that. Even from the early days of podcasting, I always wanted to give people the experience that if they would close their eyes, or in this case, since it's television, to certainly open their eyes and ears, that they could feel as if they were there with me and to experience at least to a certain extent part of the grace of being on a pilgrimage and being on a journey and discovering all these incredible sights and sounds and experiences of being on a pilgrimage and being in another country. So that was one reason. The second reason was that I had been asked by the organization that does this pilgrimage, as well as many others. They organize many pilgrimages each year to Lourdes, to Fatima, to Rome, to Assisi, you name it, Ireland. They go all over the place. They asked me to film material for a video clip that will be shown. It's kind of like a 3-minute, 4-minute thing that will be shown on the annual reunion day of all the pilgrims that have participated in these journeys. So every year they come together in Amersfoort, in my town, and there is a full day with lectures, with a mass, with entertainment, music, and of course lots of information, not just about pilgrimages, but a lot of other Catholic organizations are invited to be there with their material. So it's a great day, and they wanted to. So this is kind of the, let's say, the highlight of the year for this organization. It's the biggest pilgrimage, and so they wanted to have like a visual representation of what that meant for all the pilgrims, and this was the biggest pilgrimage. Also, in terms of participants, there were around 450 Dutch pilgrims that were in the Holy Land at the same time. And there were 2 days during which we all came together, which was incredibly impressive, especially because of the places where we gathered. So the first gathering was on the Mountain of the Beatitudes. Imagine that. We're celebrating Mass there, and in the distance you see the water where Jesus went with the boat and where he called his first apostles. And then he sat down on the mountain where we were sitting for Mass, and he taught the Beatitudes, the first big, you could say, announcement of his doctrine, of his teaching. And it's still the kind of the core of his message that is condensed in those Beatitudes. And so we were there celebrating together. It was a wonderful, for us, it was the first day of our, or the first real day of our pilgrimage. For others, they had been in the Holy Land for a little bit longer. There was a group of my archdiocese who actually first went to Jordany, and then they came to Israel. So we all came together. And then a few days later, which was even more awesome, we were all together in Nazareth in the Church of the Annunciation, which for me is the Church of Hope. It is the place where the Virgin Mary lived and where she received the message from the angel Gabriel, the Archangel Gabriel, that she would become the mother of Jesus, of the Messiah. And so that change, that was the pivotal moment. Her yes opened a whole new, let's say, second half of our history here on Earth, because of her yes, the entire world was given the greatest gift ever, which was the coming of Jesus. And so to be there with all these Dutch pilgrims was, for me, a very emotional moment. Because we are in a dire situation when it comes to the Catholic faith and, you know, Christian faith in general in our Western countries. We're on a very steep decline. I see it every day, you know, empty churches. We have to close down so many churches, and not enough people to serve as priests or religious or as deacons. So we are in desperate need of hope. And for me, to be there, to pray, and to sing these beautiful songs of our tradition in this huge, wonderful church was like one huge prayer of all of us to the Lord to give us hope again, as he gave hope to mankind by sending his angel to the Virgin Mary. And of course, we also asked for Mary's intercession for our church in the Netherlands. And of course, in terms of numbers, it's just a tiny percentage of the total amount of Catholics that we have in our country. And from, let's say, a non-believer's point of view, it's just a ritual, it's just a tradition, it's something that a few Catholics who can afford it have done. But if you look at it with the eyes of faith, for me, this is a very important moment in the history of the Catholic Church in my country. Because with 450 people, we all pray together to the Lord to come and help us and bring new hope and new life to our church. And I know that that prayer, especially because it is supported by the intercession of the Virgin Mary, that prayer will be heard. Anyway, that was the reason that I was there. It was work, because I was filming everything and I was walking around with my Canon DSLR. And you know me. Once I'm there and there's no one to stop me, the only thing I do is work from morning till evening. Fortunately, I've got a lot more experience under my belt after having filmed so many episodes this year. So I've got better control of the camera. I'm a better storyteller. I'm a better cameraman. And it was a lot of fun to discover this country, because that's what I was. I've never been to the Holy Land, to discover the country through my camera. And I've said this before, and I had the same experience. It's by recording my experience that I actually experience things in a much more intense way than if I would not be recording and sharing this experience. I also took a lot of pictures. If you're following me on Facebook or on Instagram or on Twitter, you may have seen the photos that I took. Some of them were real photos in a certain way. Others were stills from the video footage that I shot. And I try to give as much as possible a kind of a broad overview of all the different places and the different experiences that we had. And one thing that really struck me was how colorful this country is. Whether you are out there at the foot of the Mountain of Beatitudes, or you're near the water of the River Jordan, the place where Jesus was baptized by John the Baptist, or whether you are in the old streets of ancient Jerusalem walking the way of the cross, there were colors everywhere. We had wonderful weather. Only the first day it was raining. And then after that, we had tons of sunshine, and because it's much more south than my country, it's light very early in the morning. So you wake up at 6 or 7, and the sun is already shining, and then it just beautiful springtime weather, nice temperatures, a relatively dry climate, so it's not this humidity. And then around 4 o'clock in the afternoon, all of a sudden, like in 15 minutes, the entire light is gone. And I have to switch lenses, literally. I have to switch from a zoom lens, which has a pretty narrow aperture, to a 50-millimeter wide aperture lens, so I could still take photos. Filming was kind of tricky at night or in the churches. This is very dark, but I tried to do my best. And I'm pretty happy with the result. Of course, I haven't really screened all the material yet, but I've got a pretty good feeling about it. So the next couple of days, I'll be editing that in the form of a TV show, a 25-minute TV show, which is going to be very hard with... How much did I record? I had a memory card. I'm recording in 50p HD. So that's a lot of data, of course, a pretty high bit rate. I had one SD card of 128 gigs plus another one, 64 gigs, completely filled to the brim. And then I had a small 32-gig card that I only used for a little bit. So that's a lot of material. And I know that in order to turn this into a story, I need to go about things a bit differently than I normally do. Normally, I just start editing, and I'll just see where the story takes me. In this case, I'm going to do it in the same way that I handled my huge pile of material that I brought back from Santiago, from Spain, where I had, I don't know, 40 hours of material, if not more. And I just sat down, I wrote a story, recorded a huge voiceover. So basically I was narrating the entire thing. And then I used the images to fill in that narrative. And I'm going to do the same here. I know how I want to tell the story. It's pretty simple. It's kind of a travel log, but also I'm telling the story of a couple of people that went with us, that I interviewed a bit for a bit more time. So it was this couple of a man from the Ivory Coast who was married to a Dutch lady, and he has Parkinson's disease. He's in a wheelchair. She's also of an advanced age, so every once in a while she also had to sit in a wheelchair. So that was a man of great faith. I was interviewing him, and I was thanking him for making well, helping me believe is a really, really great conversation. There was another lady who had just been diagnosed. She'd already bought or how is it? Volunteer. She had already. It's not bought a ticket. How do you say that? She had already decided to go on this pilgrimage, and then just a few weeks before she left, after being cancer-free for 10 years, she had had cancer in the lymphatic system, and for 10 years she had been free of cancer. Just a few weeks before she left for the Holy Land, she was diagnosed with new pockets of cancer in several different places. Can you imagine how that impacts your pilgrimage? Unbelievable. And then there was another lady, also made a big impression on me. She had lost her husband exactly a year ago. She had been taking care of him for about a year. It was a very happy marriage. And then she tumbled into one of the deepest depressions imaginable. And she told me about that. It was unbelievable. The battle she has had to fight this past year to get out of that depression. And now, for the first time, she felt she was strong enough to go on this pilgrimage. And she deliberately went on this pilgrimage to ask for strength, for new strength. And it was one of the most gracious pilgrims I've ever met. And so I'm going to try to bring those stories into the narrative as well, because I want to do more than just show people the sights. And then we did that, and then we did that. That anyone can do that. I want to tell a story about the people and what this journey does to the pilgrims. And of course, the final question is, what did it do with me? And that's a complicated thing, because I was there for work, and I had to leave right after a very intense couple of weeks of work where we traveled a lot. I was exhausted when I started the pilgrimage, and the days were long and hard. So from that point of view, it was a very tough experience. On the other hand, it was very joyful, and I was very elated to be there, and being able to share that with all of you that are following me on social media made me realize every single hour of the day how lucky I was to be there and to experience that. And to there's only one first time that you can discover the Holy Land, and I definitely want to go back, because we didn't have enough time to really take it in. But for a first pilgrimage, I was extremely happy that I've seen all this, and many places we only saw for just a glimpse out of the window of the bus, and I took a picture, and then I used the picture actually to let it sink in a little bit more, to have some more time to process everything that I was seeing. But there were so many places that were linked to the stories that I grew up with and that inspire me so much. And I didn't... One final thing, and then we'll move on. It was so much more of a positive experience than I thought it would be. One of the reasons that I never went to the Holy Land was that I was kind of nervous about it. I was like, well, what if it's going to be a negative experience? What if we were going to be confronted with all this violence and all the tensions and the political or the politicization of these holy places? What if it's nothing like what I imagined, and it will shatter the kind of serene idea that I have of all these biblical places? Well, it turned out that I was worried for nothing. The places were so wonderful. And yes, they were totally different from what I imagined, but they were so much better than what I imagined. And even if you are in places that are not recognizable anymore, where there's a totally different, you know, there's a city, there's a church, and it doesn't look anything like what it used to look. When you're traveling through Israel, through the countryside, you still see a lot of the countryside as it must have looked in the time of Jesus. When we're standing at the Lake of Galilee, when you're standing at the foot of the mountain of the Beatitudes, even though they built churches there and stuff, but a lot of it is still nature, and it was so much more beautiful than I thought it would be. So great experience. I will definitely do it again. And in the meantime, believe it or not, during the pilgrimage, late at night, I was watching some movies. So let's talk about movies. Why not? That's what this segment is about. And the special, let's say, dimension of these movies was that I was watching them with the sound turned off because the hotel where we were staying had very thin walls. So if I would have put on the audio, I would have woken up my fellow pilgrims. I didn't want to do that. Same thing on the plane. There was no sound, and I was watching these movies.
I do not like movies.
They're predictable. Like, the guy gets the girl, and that kid sees dead people, and Darth Vader is Luke's father.
Not liking movies is like not liking puppies.
They're fine. I just get bored and never make it to the end.
You know, you need a movie education. You need a moviecation. I'm gonna give it to you.
There's this educational aspect to the jingle, and in this case, watching these movies without sound, it was basically just to distract myself. When you're filming, I'm also constantly thinking. I have to constantly compose, in a way, the work that I do. It's not like taking a picture where the only thing you do is to, well, and that is already sometimes a complicated thing. It's not just a composition of one shot. No, I have to tell a story. So I'm constantly like, okay, so I filmed this. Now I'm going to interview that lady. How am I going to tell the story of tomorrow? And the downside of going on a pilgrimage that is this intense, where you have these 12 or 14 hour days, is that my head doesn't stop, and I'm thinking about it. I can't sleep because it's constantly processing all these impressions, all these places where I've been, and all the stories that I hear. So one way for me to turn off my brain is to distract it, to say, look here, it's cool, it's a blockbuster movie, but it doesn't have any sound. So on the plane, the way to on the El Al plane to Israel, they showed us a bit of a more old-fashioned plane. The seats were really bad, actually. That's how it was, a 737, but you could tell that it was an older plane. And they didn't have these personalized video screens on the chairs, but they had a couple of them hanging from the ceiling, and they were showing a movie. And in order to be able to follow the movie, you had to plug in headphones, which we didn't have. They didn't hand them out. So I was I wasn't really paying attention, but I was like, every once in a while, I was watching this movie that they were playing, and it was one of the, it was a movie in the horror genre. And you know how much I don't like horror genre. Now you may wonder, why would they show a horror movie on a plane? Actually, it was it was the second Mamma Mia movie, which for me is a horror movie. So it was Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again. And I'm a huge fan of ABBA and of the music of ABBA. I grew up with that. That was the music. Those were the hits that were on the radio all the time when I was in high school. So I do like the songs. I really gave it a try on Netflix to watch, or was it on Prime? It doesn't matter. To watch the first Mamma Mia movie several times, and I never made it to the end. That's how much I disliked that movie. It's just really not my genre. I can't help it. I know many of you like it, but I was like, oh, it's so painful to watch. What are they doing to my songs? And then the sequel was I watched the trailer. I was like, yes, this is exactly like the first one. Well, so I was watching this movie without headphones, and just see the movie for what it is visually. And it was terrible. It's just silly people wearing silly clothes in very limited sets. I mean, just visually, it wasn't real. I think they filmed part of it in Greece, and then part of it is clearly on a soundstage. But the costumes are lame, and it's everything. There's nothing happening visually. There are a few dances, but they're all really silly. Really silly. The thing is, I was looking around, and some people did have headphones, or they used the earbuds from their phone. So they were singing along, and they were having a great time. And then when we left the airplane, they were like, "Oh, that was a great movie, and I love ABBA." And it's, but without the songs, really. there was nothing, nothing, nothing interesting to watch. So I decided that that is actually, it's a cool way to watch a movie. It's just deliberately turn off the sound. So every evening on the in the hotel in Jerusalem, they had these small televisions, pretty old-fashioned. And so there were, of course, a lot of channels in Hebrew or in Arab, but couldn't follow any of that. But there was this one channel that had blockbuster movies. Every evening, I think at 7 or – no, it was probably at 8 after dinner, they would start a blockbuster movie. And really cool movies. And they would have Hebrew subtitles. And then it's just the English soundtrack. So I turn down the sound and I would watch that and then fall asleep after a while. Of course, not after not before having turned off the TV. So I watched the first one. It was Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, which is still, I love the new Planet of the Apes series. It's really well done. It's with Andy Serkis with motion capture playing Caesar, who is this this very intelligent ape who learns to speak and becomes the leader of the revolution against these cruel people that roam the earth. And the Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, I think, is from 2014. The sequel, the last one that in the series was War for the Planet of the Apes. And that one was a really, really good movie. And I remember that Dawn of the Planet of the Apes was good, but it was more in the kind of in the field of okay. It wasn't really spectacularly good. Well, watching it without sound made me aware that of the flaws in that movie. It's a bit slow. It's slow. There's not much happening. It's clearly setting up the battle that will be much more important in War for the Planet of the Apes. And it just feels like it's just not, emotionally, it's not very strong. And something that I didn't realize when I saw it in the theater, when it first came out, but the Andy Serkis' Caesar looks fake. It doesn't work. It's too human in a certain way. It doesn't blend in with the other apes, and it was so much better in War for the Planet of the Apes. That movie just nailed the motion capture and just the realism of these apes, and you could tell that in 2014 there it was already spectacularly good. But there was still this uncanny valley, and that was gone in War for the Planet of the Apes. Then the next evening, they showed Terminator Genesis. Now, I know that the real true Terminator fans loathed that movie. I actually really enjoyed it. It's a popcorn movie, nothing more and nothing less. But I have to say, without the sound, I still found it very enjoyable. I remembered the story. You know, it kind of plays a lot with the first Terminator movie. Schwarzenegger is in it, and then it has a CGI Schwarzenegger. Is actually pretty darn good. Very much, they recreate this first scene where the Terminator, when he's still dangerous Terminator, evil Terminator, when he first materializes in this orb, you know, that cuts out a part of a big truck that is parked there in the dark. But then they show it from a different angle, and it's so well done. It's almost got a bit of a Spielbergian vibe to it. And then later on, part of the special effects is a little bit over the top, a bit fake, especially the kind of the clear, you know, green screen work in the finale of the movie. But it still held up pretty well, and I enjoyed watching it even without the sound. Then the evening, one evening after that, was X-Men First Class. Actually, that was yesterday evening. X-Men First Class, which is the first one in this reboot with younger. It's kind of like a prequel to the X-Men series that we had. So it has the younger generation, kind of shows how Xavier started his school for the extraordinarily gifted, etc. And I thought it was kind of okay, but when I saw that first movie, I didn't really appreciate it very much. I liked the kind of older X-Men cast much, much more. And rewatching it without the sound made me realize how heavily that movie depends on the special effects to make it cool. But there was, I don't know, just not. It's also because it's a prequel, so no one is really in jeopardy because you already know they're going to be fine, and that never works, I think, with movies like that. So we have to really step away from all these prequels. It's enough. Just show us the future, not the past. Then, on the plane, just a few hours ago, they showed Mission Impossible Fallout, which is the most recent installment of the Mission Impossible series. And I think perhaps the last one with Tom Cruise in the main role. I'm not certain about that. I read something or heard something in the news about him stopping one of his major roles. Anyway, I was, again, watching it without any sound. And man, it was bad. It was really bad. So I was mostly analyzing the editing. And I've not, this is one of those movies that I didn't have time for when the movie was in theaters. So I still need to watch the story, and perhaps, if you really watch the story with the sound and the music, of course it gets more exciting. So I was watching this without knowing what was going on, just watching the editing, watching the actors. Good Lord, it was bad. There was just the editing, and it's got a great cinematographer who did great movies, but it just, in this movie, it felt lazy, and it felt as if they spent money in the wrong places. So they would have these incredible camera movements. For instance, at one point, Tom Cruise and his crew is in a Jeep, and they're on a hangar, like an airplane airport, hangar, field, or whatever. They're approaching a hangar, and they're in this car, and the camera is following the car at high speed and low on the ground to create this sense of extreme speed. And it's like, oh my goodness, how did they film this? This must be CGI. It looks very spectacular, very expensive, oozes this big budget, blockbuster vibe. And then all of a sudden, like, everything stops, and you see this super static back and forth, with just people standing there, basically talking heads. And I was like, what's going on? Why would you do this expensive crane shot that looks like you spend $1 million only on that, and then follow it up with this super static, boring dialogue don't get me started on Henry Cavill, who, of course, is the actor we know from Superman. You know all about the mustache gate, when he did the reshoots for Justice League. He was already under contract and filming this Mission Impossible Fallout movie. And in his contract, it said specifically that he couldn't shave his mustache, which is a really bad 70s-looking mustache, was part of the deal. But then they had to reshoot a huge chunk of Justice League. But they had, all of a sudden, Superman had a mustache, which, God, doesn't work. And so they replaced the upper lip with a CGI upper lip. And it was one of the biggest CGI dramas that we've ever seen. It just, I think that upper lip in itself tanked the entire DC Justice League franchise. Unbelievably bad. Anyway, so he plays this dude, and it's like, the only thing he does is playing like a slightly taller, a little bit even more muscular version of Tom Cruise. And basically the two of them are beating up people all the time. And it's in these very predictable, like long, long choreographed fights where you know that no one is hitting anyone. It's just clever editing. And it just looked really bad. I don't know. It's just, at one point I was like, okay, I'm just going to stop watching this. I'll rewatch this when it, it's streaming somewhere. But for now, I'm not going to follow this anymore. It's not interesting enough. Now, later on, I did some research while the plane was taxiing to the gate at Schiphol Airport. Because I was so intrigued by these static scenes where people are just standing still and not moving. And I was like, why? Well, it turns out there was a reason for that. Those static scenes were shot because the two of the main actors had huge problems physically that prevented them from moving. Tom Cruise broke his ankle. While he always loves to perform his own stunts, and he did a ton of stunts in this movie, like the helicopter flying. It's all really Tom Cruise. He's not a stuntman. So at one point, he has to jump from one building to another, and then he makes a wrong landing. It's actually on – you can see it on YouTube. There's some behind-the-scenes footage of that, and he breaks his ankle. So he – the day after that, they shot a scene with Baldwin – who also played as a major role. And Baldwin was scheduled to undergo very, I think, like a double hip surgery or something like that. So he had so much pain in his joints that he could barely walk, let alone act. And so these two main actors are in that scene, and they basically had to film it like talking heads, because every time they would move a tiny little bit, both these actors would cringe from the pain. So that explains it. Goes to show that sometimes there are very, very, you know, real life explanations for strange moments when it comes to the way this movie was filmed. Hopefully I'll enjoy it a little bit more once I see this with, you know, good quality on a big screen TV or whatever, and with good sound. But just without sound, sometimes it's very revealing, and you're much more focused on, okay, so what did they do with the editing? Is the acting coming across without the lines? So I dare you to try that out with a few movies. Just turn down the audio and just see what that movie does when it's just a silent movie. Very, very interesting.
Catholics rock!
It is time to visit the Peculiar Bunch. This is the community of Catholics with their strange habits and customs and traditions.
Catholics can be a peculiar bunch. No meat on Friday.
No meat? What do they eat, light bulbs?
And yes, those Catholics are trying to improve the world by living a certain lifestyle, and let's talk a little bit more about that.
Man, you guys got more crazy rules than Blockbuster Video.
Now, of course, the way that Christians try to live their life is usually based on the Bible, and in the case of Catholics, also on the tradition, and we are helped to make choices and to discern the way we should live our lives with the aid of the church, who guides us and instructs us. And that all of that is, of course, going back to what we perceive to be the motions of the Holy Spirit, who is ultimately the true guide of everyone who tries to seek what is good and what is true and what is beautiful. But a lot of the issues that we have to deal with in our modern day and age are not part of the world and the culture that we find in the Bible. Jesus never talked about pollution or about ice caps melting or about, you know, fuel consumption or anything, or space travel or medical dilemmas that we're currently facing because science has evolved so much. So what do you do when you're confronted with these, you know, kind of modern day issues and you still want to find some inspiration from the gospel? Well, that's why I think in the Catholic Church, the magisterium is so important. It's not just like the Bible is not just a set of black and white literal guidelines for everything. It's not static. In a sense, the Bible is the foundation. The Word of God is the foundation for all our decisions. It shows you the general view of how God sees us and how He wills things, how He guides us through the Ten Commandments and through the whole of Revelation. But in order to apply those lessons, we need the magisterium. We need bishops. We need a pope, guides, shepherds that stand in that tradition, that have been mandated through ordination to guide us, and that will help us apply these general teachings, these universal teachings that you find in both the Old and in the New Testament to our current day situations. And of course, since our culture and our world is changing so quickly, so does this process of application of these rules and of ethics in general. And so one of the newer issues that we're currently dealing with, and that the Catholic Church at least is trying to address, still in a very modest way, but it's evolving and it's growing, is this whole issue of pollution of the world. And to give you a very specific example, I was just a few hours ago, we were in the plane and they let us sleep for a couple of hours because everyone was so tired. The reason, by the way, that we had to leave so early for the airport was not just a journey from Jerusalem to Tel Aviv, but it was also because we were traveling with these handicapped people in wheelchairs and with all sorts of medical equipment. So it took us several hours to go through customs and security and whatnot. So we barely made it in time, actually. So in the plane, everybody fell asleep, and then they served us breakfast. Or, fortunately, they called it breakfast because the only thing you get is a plastic tray with a bunch of plastic containers. And in those containers, sometimes more plastic, and you start to unwrap things, and you open this box, and there is what is supposed to be an omelet. Thank goodness they told us it was an omelet, because it looked like a something that was definitely dead. It was really, and it didn't have any taste. It was really bland. There was this something that looked like bread but did not taste like bread. There was at least the water tasted like water. There was this thing, it said yogurt, and instead it was kind of this salty, almost like more cheese, like a very strange. I was expecting something fresh, you know, you just put in some sugar and enjoy it. Nice yogurt. Instead, it was hearty. It's so weird. What else was there? This overly sweet, horrible kind of cake. Felt like it was like a brownie covered in milk chocolate, but of the sweetest kind. It was really mushy and awful. That was about it. But the thing was, while I was eating that breakfast, I felt so guilty because every time I opened one of those containers, I was creating plastic waste. Everything, the utensils were plastic, the wrappings were plastic. There was more plastic on my plate than actual food. And then imagine this entire plane of hundreds of people, and they're all generating this huge mini pile of plastic, and all that is gathered, and of course, part of it may be processed, but I'm actually not very hopeful. Probably is just all going to a landfill. And this goes on day by day after day after day. And I've been trying to think about, now that I've moved to another rectory, I have a chance to kind of make a new beginning and rethink my lifestyle. And one of the things I really want to do is try to not only declutter my stuff, but also declutter when it comes to waste. Trying to produce less waste, make my footprint smaller when it comes to that. And of course, I'm just one of the billions of people on this planet, so it's not going to make a big immediate impact on the situation of our planet. But it all adds up. If a million people start making these decisions, it does make an impact. If a billion people start living differently, it changes everything. So you got to start somewhere. And one of the things that I'm trying to do is, how do I get rid of plastic? Or not getting rid of it, how do I use less plastic? And we've seen the videos and the clips and we've read the reports about what plastic is currently doing in our seas. It's also creating, because plastic does degrade, but it degrades in microplastics, and those microplastics get absorbed by living tissue, by animals and plants, and it gets in the food chain. And now they've detected actually these microplastics also in our bodies, and we still don't know what the effect will be in the long term, because we are producing more plastic than ever before. We're slowly starting to wake up. And I think one of the starting points is, of course, is not just how can I find practical ways to not use plastic, but first the mentality has to change. And Pope Francis speaks a lot about what he calls the throwaway culture. We're treating everything as if it's something you use once and you throw it away and you don't care where it ends up. And it's of so little value that it can be replaced by something new that you then throw away and then you buy something new. And this is a mentality that also starts to influence the way we treat our planet, our animals, our food chain, the way we produce things, the way we treat other human beings. One of the big warnings that Pope Francis gives a lot is let's make sure that we don't introduce this throwaway culture in the way, for instance, we treat the elderly or the unborn children or the sick, the people that are handicapped, the special needs people. If we are already in this throwaway mentality, and one of the results is this huge plastic problem that we've caused, but we're also starting to treat each other with that same mentality. You know, it's like people are dispensable. They're only useful, if they're productive. And then if they're not, you just throw them away. You put them away. You throw them away. And that gets eerily close to, you know, some of the worst things that we've seen in the history of mankind. One of the places that we visited in Israel was the Yad Vashem Memorial, which is a huge museum dedicated to the horrors of the Second World War, more specifically the persecution of Jews and the systematic extermination of the Jews. And one of the things that came back time and again in what they showed was this throwaway mentality, if pushed to the extreme, does to our world, to our dignity, to the dignity of people, reduce people to basically waste. The Nazis were considering Jews as actual waste that they had to burn, that they had to eliminate. And it's living human beings. They're no different than anyone else. And they were reduced to not just lesser human beings, but to objects, to not even less than objects, not something that was not just not useful. It was a threat. It was something they had to exert. So, and that's not so long ago. That's very recent, this part of our history. And so we need to get out of that mentality. And I do believe that these issues are linked, are interlinked. And we need to, if we change our mentality when it comes to plastic waste, it will also help us change our mentality or reconvert our mentality to a better way of treating each other. I think Martin is in the corridor trying to warn me that it's time to go home. He's taking very good care of me here. And of course, I've had a long day, but I'm on a roll. I still have energy. I've got 13 minutes left on my recorder. So, Martin, thank you so much for warning me that it is time to wrap things up. I will do that, but I still have some stuff to talk about. Anyway, good news when it comes to plastic waste. The EU Parliament just a few weeks ago has voted to ban single-use plastics like plastic plates or cutlery or straws. I think the EU is showing the right example. When I was in Israel, I was pretty shocked to see how much there was still this plastic culture, this throwaway culture. And it's kind of funny that, you know, just a few years ago, the Netherlands was exactly like that. So it shows you how much a country can change in just a few years. So if we do that all together, hey, it does have an impact. And with that, I think it is time to go to the world of virtual books. Don't need to kill any trees for that because you're just reading it electronically.
When did you become an expert in thermonuclear astrophysics?
Last night. The packet. The extraction theory papers. Am I the only one who did the reading?
I did a little bit of reading while I was in Israel. I took my Kindle with me, but unfortunately I was most of the time too tired. I did read a little bit on the airplane. I started reading the screenplay, the original screenplay of the first Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them movie. And at first I was a bit disappointed that J.K. Rowling didn't write real books and only wrote a screenplay for this new saga in the wizarding world. But now that I'm reading it, it's actually pretty readable. It's enjoyable. I like, even though I've just recently rewatched a movie in preparation for The Crimes of Grindelwald. But I'm reading the screenplay and I'm seeing the movie in my head, and that's pretty good. There are some tiny differences as well, so it's an interesting read. I really enjoy it, and it also gives you a little bit more insight in the way she intended certain scenes, which helps clarify the information dense Crimes of Grindelwald. I've just checked on the Amazon store, the Kindle store, and actually the second screenplay for The Crimes of Grindelwald is now also available in the Kindle store. I can't wait to read that one once I finish the Fantastic Beasts of the first screenplay. It's $12.99 in the American Kindle store, which is okay. I'm still gonna kind of hold out a little bit and wait for a nice daily deal or something like that. I'll keep you posted. If you follow me on Facebook and on Twitter, I'll usually alert you to interesting daily deals in, well, the U.S. Kindle store, because I have got a U.S. account. But sometimes these deals will also be in other versions of the Amazon store. So, very short book segment. We move over to the world of technology.
We are on the cutting edge of technology.
Wow. Well, what does that mean?
Let's plug it in. It's going to say, hey, I see you plugged in a new device. And it's going to load in the appropriate drivers. You'll notice that this scanner built... Whoa.
Well, all your technology stuff, it just ends in disaster.
But there is one more thing.
Technology is very important in my life because I use it for my productions. And I just wanted to briefly mention the kind of tech that I take with me when I'm traveling. And as you know, I travel light. I only have usually just one carry-on bag. In this case, because I had an entire camera bag with me, I had two bags. But fortunately, I didn't have to pay for the bag that was the bag with my clothes, basically. So what did I take with me? Even there, I tried to stick with the minimum, even though I could carry along a lot of weight because of the two bags. I still want to keep things simple. Why carry something all around the world if you don't use it? So, from experience, I knew that I would not use my iPad. I would not use a laptop. I just don't have the time. So the only device that I took, the only internet device, was my phone, my trusty iPhone 6. It's getting older and older. I can tell it's getting slower. The battery is running out. So I have to make sure I get the battery replaced before the end of the year, because I think it's still under that special deal because of the the slowdown gate where they deliberately slow down the apps to save the battery or to prevent battery problems. So Apple made it cheaper to have the battery replaced. So I think I have to travel to Amsterdam for that. That's the only place where we have an Apple store. Anyway, so the phone, the only thing that I should have taken with me was a Bluetooth keyboard, because it's really hard to type, especially if you're typing like me in several languages, on the screen. It's a pain. So next time I will carry with me, not the Apple Bluetooth keyboard, because it's kind of heavy, but I bought a plastic one. I think the brand is Trust, but it also connects to the phone, and it makes it much easier to type, for instance, comments, or to react to comments, or to process my email, which I did on the plane. I'm so proud. Inbox zero on the way to the Holy Land. And when I came back, I reprocessed the newer emails that came in. And I'm again at inbox zero. And I'm using Tasks. It's a very simple to-do list app from Google. And so the way I do it is, when I see an email and I think, that's actionable and I don't have time to deal with that now, I just add a task in Tasks, and I say, see email. And then I can just search for that particular email, but I can already archive the email. So that's basically my way to empty my inbox, even though I know that some of the emails that I'm discarding still have important information that I need to act upon. But it's no longer kept in my inbox, because that's a lousy place to keep your to-do items. Instead, I'm using Tasks. And super simple, It's nothing fancy, but it works for me. It's basically like a groceries list for to-do stuff. I also took with me my DSLR, my ATD, which is a nice Canon DSLR. It's still pretty heavy. It's not mirrorless. It's got nice lenses. I've got the kit zoom lens, which is okay, although it struggles in low light situations. And there were unfortunately a lot of low light situations. I also have two other lenses that I always carry with me, a 50 millimeter 1.8 lens, which is very sensitive to light, but because it's not a full frame camera, it is actually a more like an 80 millimeter lens. So it's really hard to use in indoor situations where usually you would use a fast lens. Sorry for the techno babble. I'll soon wrap this up. Now I see the need for a wider angle lens that is actually also has a huge or a bigger aperture than what I'm currently using on the zoom lens. And then I have the super wide angle lens, which is a 10 millimeter lens, I think. So it enables me to, for instance, do like a huge shot of like a big cathedral or a church or a landscape. I use it a lot for some of the landscapes that we saw while we were traveling from Nazareth to Bethlehem to Jerusalem. I wanted to have a few of those kind of beauty shots where you just take in the landscape. So I was glad to have that wide angle lens. The problem is it is a very bad lens when it comes to the light. It doesn't let in much light. And so you can only use it in the sun, basically, when it's really bright outside. But when it's bright outside, it performs really well. And it was a very cheap lens. But I do see the need for like an upgrade in the future. But for now, I made it work. Also use my Rode microphone, which is a tiny little directional microphone, which really is like a miniature shotgun microphone. And I have what I always call my pet. It's like a windshield thingy. It looks like an animal. Actually, some of the people in my group were wondering, what is that? So that's my, you know, it's my cat. It's actually called dead cats. The only surprise was that when we entered the Temple Mount, you go through security. It's very, very strict. You can't wear anything religious. Even the Roman collar had to go off because it's controlled by Muslim guards. And they're very, very picky about, you know, what can enter the premises of the Temple Mount. And to my surprise, I could take my camera with me, but they didn't want me to bring the Rode microphone with me. I was like, that has to stay. And I was like, okay, where do I put it? Well, you can put it there on a few shelves there. But it was open. I was like, okay, but anyone can take anything from those shelves. And this is an expensive microphone. I'm like, okay, well, the alternative is that I stay outside. I didn't want to do that. So I just put it there under, I did one thing. I put it under a menorah. I said it was a metal menorah. And I kind of squeezed my dead cat microphone underneath the menorah, thinking that perhaps they would respect the menorah. And well, you know, it worked. When I came back hours later, it was still there. So, but it was kind of weird. There is a microphone in my DSLR as well. You know, this is just a slightly better microphone, but it's not that I can't record any sounds. Yes, kind of this arbitrary way of dealing with technology sometimes that you encounter. But anyway. And then I took my IKEA batteries. That's a tip. You know, IKEA has great batteries. You know, Apple is using these awesome NiCad batteries, but are pretty expensive. Just go to IKEA. They've got these huge chargers, and the batteries themselves are very, very powerful. So I use them for everything, for my microphones, for the Zoom audio recorder. And I've got a tiny charger that to take with me wherever I go. I've got two other batteries for my DSLR, so I'm never out of power. And then the most important thing that I want, or the tip that I want to give you, is the backpack that I bought. I bought this 2 years ago, and it's the best purchase I've ever done when it comes to carrying along technology and tech devices. It's the Case Logic backpack. There will be a link in the show notes. And just take a look. You can use this for a number of devices. I use it for my SLR camera. It has a special compartment with where you can leave in the lens, and it's nicely protected and everything. And then it has a lot of orange compartments that you can actually change. You can make a setup of the backpack that suits your lenses, your whatever you take with you. And it's wonderful. I was carrying it wherever I go. There's also a place on the outside where you can attach a tripod. So that and it has a special compartment, if necessary, if you take one with you, for a small or like a lightweight laptop. So I've taken that everywhere. Never had to worry about, you know, things, holding things in my hand. I just put it in a backpack. It's well protected. It's very sturdy. It's water resistant. It can even carry a drone, a DJI Mavic Pro or any of the other kind of smaller drones. And it's got memory foam, and it's actually quite affordable. So if you've ever wondered, you know, what kind of backpack or what kind of bag should I use for my lenses, for my equipment, I can highly recommend the Case Logic backpack. Well, one final segment, and then we're actually really going to wrap this up. I need to figure out how I get rid of this. There's something. What? I did something on my iPhone here with the jingle player. How do I get rid of this? Oops. There is a slider here. Perhaps I just have to click it. No, it doesn't work. What if I do this? Oh, it's a recommendation.
I've got one recommendation. Ready? Ready? Sell, sell, sell.
Okay, we'll do recommendations then. I was actually looking for the jingle for games, but instead, this is the only one that shows up. Oh, well, technology. What if I press A? No, it doesn't work. Oh well, doesn't matter. Anyway, my recommendation is on the level is in the field of games. Of course, Digital Monday comes up where a lot of these like Amazon, they have sales. If you find a deal on American Truck Simulator or Euro Truck Simulator, definitely pick it up. I've been traveling a lot by bus in Israel, and I was amazed to see how these bus drivers can navigate this huge bus through these tiny streets full of traffic and honking people and everything. But on the other hand, I was like, well, I know how he is doing this because I'd been training to do this with huge trucks in these truck simulators. It's a very strange type of game. It's more of a simulator. So you basically have a truck. It's in 3D. It represents basically your main window. You have you can basically, I use a controller. You can also use a real PC steering wheel for that. But it's very realistic. And what they did with American Truck Simulator, with the base game, you get a pretty large area. It's all on the currently on the West Coast. And then gradually they add more DLC. And they've done that with the Europe part, the Europe version, which has been around for a bit longer. For instance, with France, which looks really good. Italy also looks pretty realistic. The whole northern part of Europe, so Norway, Sweden, Denmark, and it's the game has been around for a couple of years now, so it's not the latest technology, but there's a lot of detail in the game. And what is really well done is the physics of driving a huge truck. And I've learned that it's actually much easier than I thought to navigate a truck. And it's all about the way you turn, you make the turns, and you first go to the middle of the road, and then you start turning. And basically, as soon as the cabin has made the turn, then most of the time, the rest will follow. Of course, very, very difficult corners. Sometimes you get stuck. But it was so funny. I was sitting next to the driver oftentimes because I was filming through the main window, trying to film the landscape of Israel. And I saw him making moves, and I was like, oh, I know, I do that too in Truck Simulator. So anyway, it's a little tip if you like that kind of stuff. What I sometimes do when I've had a busy day, I just fire up American Truck Simulator, and I just drive from Las Vegas to San Diego. And all I do is drive. I put it on the radio. They've got the – you can play digital channels. I just listen to country music, and I'm just like, oh, I'm just driving in the U.S. in my big truck. It's just fun. There's something hypnotic about that game. So anyway, and I'm sure there are many more deals to be had. Just a word of warning, don't go overboard with all the spending on Black Friday and Digital Monday, Tuesday, whatever it is. If you want to hear some thoughts about that, check out the last episode of The Walk, where I talk about my efforts in spending less, buying less, and giving more. And with that, I think it is time to wrap things up here on my weekly show. Thank you so much for stopping by. I'm amazed to see that I still have energy. It probably means that I'm going to have a huge crash tomorrow. We'll see. Or not. Hey, one of the reasons that I have so much energy is that I switched back to keto in Israel. That always helps. But anyway, I'm going to have a long sleep. Thanks for listening. See you next week.